Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Your host. Today's show is titled The Political Think Tank, What the Politicians Could Learn from Us, Part 2. Last week's show was crazy. We discussed everything from how to fix corruption in government to teen pregnancy, legalizing prostitution, and even taxing churches. I think we even figured out how to balance our country's budget. Last week's podcast is a must hear. So this week, So this week we're going to pick up where we left off, but first let me introduce my co-host. First we have author, poet, and motivational speaker, Mr. A.J. Houston. And new to the co-host chair is one of Dallas's hottest DJs and club promoters, Mr. Kundalini. Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, Kuhn? How you doing, Carrie?
I'm good. Coon, you there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. How y'all doing today?
We're good.
Doing well.
Well, first of all, we'd like to welcome you to be part of Center Stage.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm very honored. You know what I'm saying? I do appreciate the opportunity and looking forward to this long Center Stage career that we're going to have here. Blow it up.
All right, all right. I like that. Well, listen, guys, do y'all have any thoughts about last week's show? Was there anything that y'all would like to add to the show topic last week? Because we talked about so many things. We were all over the page, but I think we figured out a lot of stuff that our lawmakers couldn't figure out.
Yeah,
well, in a nutshell, I think it's a lot. We know we need to have more shows on that particular subject because there's a whole lot of things that need to be fixed.
I agree. And I think we even figured out how to balance the budget, didn't we? Didn't we say between legalizing prostitution and taxing the churches that we'd have a surplus?
And legalizing marijuana,
exactly. So if they need to know how to balance the budget, we can tell them. Well, you know what? This week I kind of wanted to jump into we're fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And some people, it seems, have been called for repeated tours, like 2, 3, and 4 times. And I think that would be burnout for anybody. Should our country go to a draft where it would be more fair to spread it out than just to keep, I guess, having one family or two families or however many people are affected by doing these tours, to keep having to go over there so many times and burning them out?
The draft worked one time,
but we're in actually, this is like a free army. You know, all other countries, you have to go, you have to sign up at a certain age and serve for 2 years or 3 years or whatever is mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
But see, the American system has it to where you can enlist if you want to, but there are a lot of benefits. That's why they call them benefits to enlisting. But enlisting in the time of war is horrible for anybody. I know when I joined the army, if there was a war, I would have fought. I would have been happy to go, and I felt like that would be my job and that would be my purpose. And I think we still have people that are for the American system, for the country of America, and for, you know, what America stands for, even though that's not what we're hearing our politicians. But I think people still, you know, willing to stand for what America stands for without a draft.
Without a draft. So that's a no.
No.
Okay.
That is a no.
And what about you, Coon?
That would be hard for me to answer without knowing the individual situation, because I feel one of the biggest problems is it seems like a lot of these wars that they keep on fighting, everybody keep coming back and saying, okay, now what was the purpose again? So I think we need to start with problem A first, then we can move on to whether or not, I mean, because if we can maybe cure the problem A, like, you know, I think pretty much everybody agrees the whole going over there to find, like, I guess it was Iraq or whatnot, and finding these, you know, secret weapons that people had, or it wasn't really the purpose. It was more about oil, even though they don't want to really put that out there. You know, when the purpose to begin with is a flaw, everything else is going to be a flaw no matter how you do it.
See, I think the answer, and I agree with what you're saying, you definitely want to know why you're going over there before you go. But at the same time, since we're over there, we're killing our soldiers two ways. You know, they're dying from being bombed over there or being shot at or whatever, but then we're also killing them when they come back. They're so stressed out that their minds are not right. So either way, we're losing. So it just seems like to me those that are going to survive it, you don't want them to survive it and have that post-traumatic syndrome thing going on where they can't come back and reunite with their families in the way that they would want to. So I would think that having a draft would allow it to be spread out more evenly. But that's just my thought on that because, I mean, these guys are coming back stressed out. I mean, some of them, you know, are coming back home and healing their loved ones, and I'm sure that's not what they would want to do, but I guess if you've been stressed out and you've seen so much so many times, it can be a bit much. So that's just my thought.
I mean, but I feel what you're saying, Carrie, but I'm going to say it like this. Maybe I can give you a better metaphor where I'm coming from. Because you're saying that they're getting these issues from being bombed and shot at. I think pretty much with war, pretty much that's going to happen regardless of whether or not they send one family over there or five different people's families over there. So that's going to be an issue at hand. However, I use it like a basketball game. If you know that the rule of basketball is you're supposed to have five players on the court, but you keep putting six on there, what does it matter whether or not you change the players on there?
And the other thing, and what I like to add is that, you know, Terry, I'm saying that problem is going to be a problem either way. But see, the thing is, it's for that particular problem, there should be entities set up to bring them back and get them acclimated to being out of that particular situation. I think they were preparing for it, but I don't think they were prepared. You understand what I'm saying? Their entities set up, but I don't think they didn't have. The proper funding. And then the thing is if President Obama decides to fund these particular entities, then the same people are saying that he's not doing anything and that he's just building, you know, spending money, wasting money. That would probably be considered a waste of money to them too. So, and I think it's so many different things that we have to address, but they do need supporting entities, you know, psychiatrists and, you know, probably housing to bring them back and get their families acclimated back from being out of war back into the communities. So there's a lot of things that could be done, but it all has to be funded somewhere, and nobody's willing to fund anything right now. They feel like, you know, spending money on anything except the banks and corporate is a waste of time, waste of dollars.
But see, it seems like that the soldiers that are fighting this war are the poor, because it just seems like if you're rich enough to not need to use this as a way to make income, then you won't ever fight this war. But if you can't find a job because maybe you don't have enough education, or maybe you just can't find a good enough paying job, that's one of the options that a lot of young men are taking. And I don't know if it's a good option.
But,
you know,
Carrie, that was an option way before wartime. A lot of soldiers were joining because of the benefits, because they pay for education, because of that. So that option was always there, and they're still building on the same old option, but it's right now it's just time of war. So it's been the same.
But, I mean, you know, it's a different thing in going at peacetime and getting your education and going at wartime and not coming back home.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's a time of war, but I'm saying it's been the same option all along. Even when I was in school, you know, the same thing was there. You know, you want an education, you get $10,000, you know, they pay for your college degree. As long as you go and serve 3 years.
Okay. Well, then let's move on then. How do we in this country put together a fair tax system for everyone? Because, you know, you often hear under our last administration they kept saying that he kept giving tax breaks to the wealthy and he didn't give any to the poor. And now, you know, people are saying, well, the poor people are getting some breaks and, you know, the rich people aren't. How do you balance it out with everybody feel like they're paying just their share of taxes?
You can't. It's never been balanced. I'm saying, see, if they give billions of dollars to banks and they're supposed to actually pay the loans back, but they pay bonuses, that's to the rich. They give $1 billion to Sally Mae and, you know, all the other corporate companies that didn't have to pay the money back, but giving it to GM that hires so many people and demanded that they pay the money back in a time frame, and GM paid it back even before time. See, that just goes to show you that it wasn't about the money. It was about who they were giving the money to. So there's never been an entity to help. You know, it's still like Ronald Reagan's trickle-down theory. You know, if you help the rich, the money will trickle down and the poor will get some. And it's still the trickle-down theory because, you know, even the, $675 or whatever they were passing out as a stimulus package for supposedly the poor people didn't really help, because once it's broken down, you know, you can't buy a house for $675.
No.
You can't, you know, you can barely pay a bill with $675. So, but with a couple hundred billion dollars, a bank can buy a bank. Corporation can buy corporations. So they just built their pockets and still didn't loan money. So it's still, I'm going to let Coon finish that, because that's definitely one for me. But so that's a point of anger.
Really? Well, Coon, how could it be fixed?
I mean, I don't even know. I ain't even gonna lie to you because I still don't get the setup of the tax thing. I mean, one hand you got people saying that, you know, it's a law somewhere that taxes are supposed to be voluntary to begin with, and the IRS is just some company trying to enforce something that they don't even have the power to enforce. And then you got situations like what he just spoke of. So until somebody can actually tell me which one is supposed to be real, I think we're gonna have a problem to begin with. So. It's real difficult in a situation of that nature. And I always say it still goes back to looking at what this country is founded on. It's founded on people being in business for themselves. They give the people who have businesses for themselves, you know, tax breaks. And multi-level marketing companies out there always teach their people, hey, you know, you can be in business for yourself. You can write off gas and, you know, you're going out to eat and having meetings and still just be the everyday Joe Blow. And, you know, they don't talk about that stuff except for in meetings of that nature. You never see it talk to the average person that's out there on the streets normally. So the whole system that we even have in place or how to make it fair is difficult because I don't think we even understand what kind of system we got already.
And I agree with that. I mean, another unfair part of the tax system is, you know, everything seems to be if you have children, then you get this break. If you have children, then you get this break. But how unfair does it seem that if you don't have children, you don't get this break? You know, we're going to give you an extra, you know, cut on taxes up to this amount of dollars because you have one child or another, you know, tax break because you have two children. How unfair that we can work the same job, make the same amount of money, and this person gets tax breaks that I can't get because I don't have children. That doesn't even seem fair.
Well, I don't know about that one because you're feeding a family. Why would that not seem fair?
That's my point. It has to be fair because if you make the same amount of money, the number of people allocated for those same number of funds has to be split differently if you're just single or if you have three kids.
But so you're gonna penalize me because I don't have kids? I mean, I love kids. Don't get me wrong, y'all. I love kids, but. You're gonna penalize me because I don't have kids and not give me the same break just because I don't have the same amount of mouths to feed. Are you serious?
But when you go through the tax process and add it up, it's really no difference. There's other things that you can do to get the same amount of money. You know, as far as write-offs and things that you can do with your money, that you would probably get more breaks than them because they have to feed the kids, they have to buy the school clothes, they have to, you know, pay for, you know, extra groceries. But there's things you can do to get the same break.
Really? I just have never seen. That's what I've never understood about, like, okay, how can that be? But, and like I said, I love the kids. But at the same time, I didn't understand, well, why I didn't get all these breaks. And I could write off all these things because I don't have children. But, okay, you guys say it's fair. I disagree. But I say
like this, even make it a little bit more simpler. If you're making $2,000 a month and another person's making $2,000 a month, but they got two kids to feed, why would you not give them some kind of break when they have somebody else that they're taking care of and you don't? That doesn't make sense to me. How would you look at that as a penalty for helping somebody who's taking care of their family?
But I'm looking at it like a penalty. I'm just saying, make it fair for everybody. It's not fair that you say, well, you qualify, but you don't. You qualify, but you don't. But we're working the same job, doing the same thing. We're paying taxes into the same system. That's all I'm saying. I'm not against.
Because
they didn't. I'm saying to the government, why are you putting us in different categories? Why are we not in the same tax break category? That's all I'm saying. Not to the people, because it's not, you know.
They are different categories.
Yeah, why would they not? I don't understand how you don't see it in a different category.
Hey, Coon, I got a question. Okay, when it says how many people, you know, when you put zero down by dependents,
right,
and you still have one, right?
Right.
But if somebody else put three down by dependents,
right,
three and one adds up to four, three and two adds up to five, but one and zero is still one.
Okay. Y'all can run with that one. I still will never understand it. I still feel like I should get as many credits as I can to write off on my taxes. And it just seems like, let's just say it like this. Let's just make it simple. When I do, let's just say I'm not self-employed, I work for someone, and I do my little W or 1040 form or whatever, you just go straight down. You can do it in 5 seconds because you don't have no deductions really to write off. That doesn't
seem
fair.
Is it that you don't
have
any deductions, or is it that those deductions are not listed on there? Maybe you need to be doing more research.
You mean there are some we're missing?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know enough about taxes.
Okay.
I'm just asking a question.
I've checked. I ain't seen no. I mean, really, I don't know. If you're not self-employed and you just work a regular wage earner job and you don't have any dependents, you don't have many deductions. I mean, seriously,
so
are
you,
there are
but
not
are you
many
checking
deductions.
With those, but I'm asking a question, and I'm not trying to be funny. I'm saying, okay, when you're checking those deductions that you say that you're quote-unquote not getting, are you basing it on what's on that sheet of paper, or have you sat down with somebody who does taxes, say, for a living? You know, there's plenty of companies out there that have the research, that have the information, that may have information on deductions that are available to you as an individual based on your situation, your circumstances, where you live, the state you're in, et cetera, that may not be listed on that paper.
I would say most people use a tax preparer, okay, and I have in the past, and like I said, it doesn't work out so good. And so I'm just saying, you know, is that a fair system? But it seems like it's two against one, and y'all think it's a fair system.
No, it's not.
No,
it's not thinking it's fair, but here's a better question for you. What would you think would be fair in that scenario?
I think that if we both work the same job, we both made the same amount of money, then when it comes to tax breaks, we both should get the same tax. Why? It's not. You're pitting me against a person with children. I'm not. I don't have a problem with them.
But
they have a family. Great for them. But what I'm saying
is, so who
is
it that you got a problem with? Because that's what you were talking about.
It's the government. They're the ones who's setting up the tax system. Not the person.
No,
it's
no,
the government.
But Carrie, they're not pitting you against each other. It's just that when you mark the zero for dependents,
yeah,
you don't get anything in that line. Just like if you didn't, you know, donate to the presidential fund, you don't mark anything in that line. If you didn't donate clothes or donate thousands of dollars to the church, you don't put anything in that line. And you have to look at it like they put three dependents, so each dependent is worth something on that particular line, because you're not pitted against anybody. It's an individual tax form. You can still do the same thing with your donations that you do to church, donations to school, your, you know, other things, and you can still get those same breaks, because if you look at money that they're taking out and you spend it out, they're going to give it back to you. So it's just how you look at it and how you ready to prepare your taxes.
Okay, I'm going to leave it right now.
Which at that point you would go.
But it made me look like a bad guy, but okay. I'm just saying.
No, it's not making you look like a bad guy.
Tax season doesn't, you know what, tax season doesn't always, well, no, it doesn't typically work out for a single person because they don't seem to get any breaks is all I'm saying. But
do they use those lines? Because let's just say like this. Let's say they donated $1,500 to the church, but they don't ever put it down. Now, who fought is this?
It's probably the person who did. I agree. But you know.
But if they don't know it, you know what I'm saying? That's why I'm just saying it might be an education that may help them receive some more benefits. I'm not saying it's fair. I'm saying that if all of them are educated and using it properly, then we can say it's fair. But let's be honest. I deal with enough. You know, unfortunately, and I hate to say this, but I deal with enough black people to know that black people ain't got it all together. So,
okay, I'm not going
there.
I'm not going there with you. If y'all like to chime in on what we're talking about, the number to call is 347-850-8390. Again, the number to call is 347-850-8390. Okay, we're going to move on. What about, because I'm not going to win that argument, I can tell. Let me ask y'all, should we abolish the death penalty? Or is it there for a reason? I don't know. I mean, they say all the time that innocent people die on death row, so that means that the system doesn't always work. So should we abolish the death penalty?
I feel like, you know, that the death penalty is that we need the death penalty. I really do.
Now, why do we need it?
Well, because there's so many heinous crimes out here, like the Dahmers and the people that are straight up guilty that still – and see, me, I think the change to the death penalty should be that if a person and his attorney go before the courts and is sentenced to death, it should be him and his attorney.
Why? What's the attorney got to do with
it? No. Wait, let me finish. Because, see, you have attorneys making money off of these people with all this money because they're trying to defend them and get them less time and get them a plea bargain. See, if the attorney is saying, okay, I know this person is guilty from jump and I'm going to defend him, they're not going to defend him. They say, no, I'm not being put to death for you. I'm saying let's make it an equal attorney goes, the attorney's put to death with the person that served the death sentence. Then the attorney would do everything in his power to make sure that he's doing a not guilty person. But if perchance in the middle of the trial, the attorney's going to say, look, I'm dropping off the case because this man is guilty. I'm sorry, I'm dropping off. He needs to get somebody else.
I didn't. Wasn't it Johnny Cochran that said green is the color of justice, which means that you can buy an attorney who can get you off of anything if you got enough green.
No, I think every attorney has said that.
Okay, but I mean, so you don't think that when they're putting people to death and maybe you know the people may be innocent, that maybe we might need to rethink it? Yeah, because in Texas,
but
they don't let nobody off death row. You don't get no stays or nothing. They just fry you.
Okay, but Carrie, the thing is, see, right now with all our technological advances, see, before people were sent to death row, we didn't have DNA, didn't have all the other things that they have, and that's how people are getting out of prison now. I think now the system has some validity. When you're found guilty, if it's a case like that with DNA and all the other things, you're guilty. And really, I don't think we should have death row. I think we should have just a hanging post on the courtyard. So when somebody's found guilty and when they walk out of court, they just walk over there, do the ceremony, and hang them right there. Let me finish. Then all the people that's thinking about doing those crimes will say, man, I just saw a guy that was guilty, didn't get 5 minutes to say nothing. So you're going to rethink the crime that you're doing.
If you just tuned in, you listen to Stage right here on Blog Talk Radio, and that was A.J. Houston. You do not,
think they should
start hanging folk again.
What are we talking about, the crucible? What is this, the crucible?
No, cool. I'm saying it as a funny, but I'm saying it's really getting to that point to where people are getting away with so many. I'm saying somebody go and kill up a whole bunch of people, and then they have this long, drawn-out trial, and they were caught with the gun. They have video of them standing there shooting everybody, and they're still getting a trial. I'm saying it's some cases we have to show, like the other countries, if you get caught stealing, they're going to cut your hand off. So you're a one-hand man walking around. You're going to think before you use that one hand you got left to go and steal something, I'm quite sure.
What do you think, Coon?
I think that's hilarious, and it would probably make a great cartoon on Adult Swim.
Oh.
I bet you would. I bet you would make some money. How much you want to put on it? Bet you would make some money.
You know, we're the most creative thinkers there is on Blog Talk Radio right here on Center Stage. Don't think we won't come up with it.
Hey, Coon, don't be stealing my idea, Coon. Don't be stealing my idea, man.
Trust me, I'm going to come and get you, because
I'm going to tell you, they got, with as much as Adult Swim, with their crazy video games that they got on their website right now, what you talking about ain't nothing.
Really?
Oh, you should go and look at them video games. They got a video game where you got 5 minutes to try to kill yourself. Are you serious?
Somebody thought that was funny. Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
Okay.
They promoted with commercials and everything.
So that said, is the death penalty a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, as far as it being a good thing or a bad thing, I have to say, at the end of the day, we're probably gonna need it because it's gonna be somebody out there that's just too much of an extreme that we really don't have a way of how to handle, how to fix it, you know, psychologically or any other way. So what other option? Let them sit, you know, unless you got a way to where you're going to get them to do some work where you can absolutely control them and not take the risk of them being, you know, getting out of prison or whatever the case may be and being back in amongst regular society, you know, until we can figure out a problem like that, you're probably going to need it. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a good thing, but for now, until further notice, it's probably a necessity.
And I can agree with that to a point. I think that the whole thing about the attorney privilege thing, I think that absolutely should not apply in the case of rape and murder. You know, and you're talking about pedophiles, rape, murder. The attorney privilege should not apply. In my opinion, it's wrong to think that it's okay for an attorney to have information that could prove the person's guilt and then at the same time not tell the courts. So I think that our whole system is set up wrong as far as that's concerned. And I don't know if it's like that in other countries, but I just think something's wrong with that whole system, the way we do it. And I think that when you're dealing with a cold-blooded killer and a serial killer, I think that it's no way that it's going to be safe to put them back on the street if we've determined that they really are what they're accused of. You know, they are a serial killer or they are cold-blooded killers. I think we should not put them back on the street. But I also think we shouldn't house them on death row for 20 years. I think that once we've established their guilt, if that is the case, then I think we should expedite the appeal process and move them through the system and do what we have to do. Because we're paying, it seems like if the system is allowing or really making the taxpayer, you know, pay into this prison system, that we're keeping people on death row 10 and 20 years, that makes no sense. If the man is found guilty and he's exhausted his appeals, then he should be put to death. That's how I see that. And that may sound cold, but I think that's really how – that's the only way that the system can really work.
Well, the hard flaw with that in a system like what we have is it's supposedly set up that even with your lawyers, also known as esquires to the court, mm-hmm. they are making an appeal on behalf of that individual just as if in attempts to make an appeal to God. And if you put them in a situation where you take away their ability to have this limited amount of information, because, again, this person is making an appeal for a judgment, and when you're going to it, however you make your choices on how you want to deal with the situation, whether or not you want to confront the issue up hand and say, yes, I'm guilty. I don't really like the word guilty. I'd rather say responsible because that's really what that means. But I'm responsible for this act or I'm not responsible for this act. That's what you're really making an appeal for. And to take that away would be them all of a sudden opening up as if they're opening up directly to, like I said, directly to God or directly to the judge. And the whole purpose of the system is to put a system in place for a group of people who, based on most people's idealistic situation of religion, they're not God, they don't know it all, and this person is making a presentation on their own behalf of this is a scenario, this is what happened, and this is their appeal to them. So right there, you kind of start playing with a whole bunch of issues based on the system set up, which is supposed to be set up basically like this is, you know, under God as opposed to direct, you know, this direct appeal, so to speak. It plays a whole fold into that because really the whole system, that's what it's based on anyway. It's based on religion. It's not based on somebody coming forward and saying, yeah, this is what I did. It's based on a religious system, and that religious system puts certain stigmatizations on just the setup in itself. So you can't, you know, this representative is going to behave just like you have, say, the good angel and the bad angel who are going to be on behalf of this person and making a plea.
Okay.
So until you can get rid of that part of the system, it's going to be difficult to say, well, they shouldn't have this privileged set of information.
Okay.
Because the whole thing is they're not God. Now if they are God, now we got a whole nother issue to play with.
We know they're not God. We're going to go back to the phone line.
Again, that's a matter of interpretation based on some people's understanding.
If you'd like to weigh in, If you'd like to weigh in on the topic, the number to call is 347-850-8390. Again, the number to call is 347-850-8390. Area code 404-388, you're on center stage. Good afternoon.
What's happening, Carrie? What's going on with you? This is Blizzum from the K100 show. It's calling in.
Blizzum? How you doing?
It's good. I'm chilling. Interesting topic, from what I'm gathering. I kind of, you know, seeing what you were talking about, and I think in general your question is what could we change in order to make the system better, basically? So many words, right?
We're talking about the death penalty right now, but a couple of what was the topic that we had? We keep moving around. So we talked about what did we talk about before the death penalty, y'all? I lost my thought.
We talked about the army and
army.
You know, type of things. Well, the military.
Oh, okay. The army and what else?
We talked about the military political process and a couple other things, you know.
Well,
okay.
Blizzum has K100 here on Block Talk Radio, which is a hot and funny show, y'all, that comes on every night at what time, Blizzum?
We air Monday through Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Yeah.
And we're going to steal some of what he talked about the other night. He was talking about reparation, which is my next question. So we'll let him chime in on that. Give us some of the highlights from your show the other night when they were talking about reparation and whether or not black folks should get it.
Well, first of all, I'm all for reparations. And I, frankly, I can't understand why anybody, especially a black person, would be against reparations. You know what I'm saying? Now, I had on the show... The basic question was, should black people A, receive reparations, and B, if so, what do you think would suffice? What do you think would satisfy, you know, black people? In other words, you know what I'm saying? What is that you can give? So I my first part of the argument was whether or not should we? That's without a question. When you take into consideration what the country has done for people of other races that they have wronged. Like when they went over there and they screwed up Vietnam, they brought a whole bunch of Vietnamese refugees over here and set them up straight. They did the same thing with the people of some of the Japanese when they bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know what I'm saying? If you were direct descendant or whatever, you get certain tax breaks and stuff. And not to mention the what they really did for the Native American Indian. You feel what I'm saying? Now, don't get me wrong. You know, they really did the Native American Indian wrong, but I don't see what they did to the Native American Indian any worse than what I feel like they did to us. I think you know, they probably did us even worse. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, at least the Indians had a chance to, quote-unquote, defend themselves, you know, on their own land. At the end of the day, they let the Indians up straight.
You say what, AJ?
I said, can I interject before you go too far?
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying because you left out the scientists and all the information and technology they sent to China, and that's why China's the leading in the industry. When that happened in China, but see, I think reparations are due simply because GE, Amana, Whirlpool didn't make the appliances they sell. They've been selling them for years. It was a black invention. See, I think it goes back even further than that. All the inventions, the whole system that America is built on inventions of African Americans, the stolen patents, and all the other things. So reparations include a whole lot of other things just besides the wrongdoing.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, I just when I did my show, I didn't even get that deep, bro. Because I'm gonna tell you, if you ever listen to my show, it's kind of half serious and half fun. So
yeah.
Half of my audience wants to tune in for the shows when I'm talking about sex and all kind of craziness, and half of them tune into the shows when I'm more serious. So I try not to dig too deep because my demographic, a lot of it may go over their head. I understand exactly what you're talking about, and I can talk on a level, maybe on center stage, but not on K100. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I basically give it to them real quick and sweet, and give it to them, give them the punch, and let them know just the basic, just why you really couldn't even though we know it's a plethora of things, why we should get reparations. And then I ask people also, what do you think would be suffice? You know, would you be happy with black people getting the 50 grand that you get when you turn 25 like the Indians, or getting school free like them? You feel what I'm saying? Tax breaks, not paying taxes for a certain amount of time. I asked them different questions like, what do you think? What will make you satisfied? And it was funny because a lot of people like myself, you feel what I'm saying? I wasn't even satisfied with just getting my education free, just being able to go to my degree, what I was going to school for, was going to end up costing me about 60 grand. I actually had to drop out of school because I literally couldn't pay it all. You feel what I'm saying? I couldn't get grants because I was working and stuff. You feel what I'm saying? And so I felt like maybe I would have took a free education or something like that if you could prove you're a direct descendant of a slave, just like Indians get a lot of quirks if they can prove they're direct descendants of a certain tribe. But it was funny because a couple of people, black people especially, was like, man, some people say they want money. Well, you know, some people don't want to go to college or whatever, so they wanted to take the money. And then some people was like, man, they shouldn't give black people any money. Because, you know, if you in the hood or whatever, they just going to spend it on 24-inch rims on their Chevys and just waste it and blah, blah. I'm like, that's an individual problem. That's an individual issue. I don't care. But some form of reparations, look, some form of reparations is due to black people. And I'm not going to get off my soapbox until we get it. You know what I'm saying?
And see, what Blizzard said, which was odd, on his show, he was asking the people, should they give it to black people? And so many people were calling in saying, don't give them money because they won't know what to do with it. And I was just so shocked that they felt like in 2010, I think Blizzard told them that the age should be 30 before they were given the money for reparation. And I thought, are they serious? And they thought that the people would not know what to do with the money until they were age 30, which seemed like,
I mean,
wow.
When you
like
think
they
about
won't
it,
have bills
think about
or.
It, when you think about it, when you really think about it, the you know, black men and black women, and just, and look, I know it's one thing about me, I'm a realist. That's what my show is. That's why I call it K100. It's short for keeping 100. I'm a realist about all situations. I will acknowledge the flaws that a lot of my people have, just like I acknowledge the flaws about white people or any other race or any other group of society, from gays on down. I pull no punches, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We got some black people and we got a lot of niggas in our race. You see what I'm saying? Now, that's just straight up. People don't like when I talk like that sometimes, but it is what it is. I think, actually, the age of 30 is a good age, you feel me, to make you, or at least 25 before you can actually get a large lump sum of money, being as though we are already at a disadvantage and we are living in a society with our culture where we're not even being taught the basic financial things that we need to know. You feel me? They don't teach us about credit and other shit like that, in high school. You feel me? So, and we have a lot of our parents and our generation, you know, that don't know a lot about credit scores and all kind of stuff like that, and mortgage rates and what's principal and all that kind of stuff. They don't know that stuff. So to give somebody like that a large lump sum of money when, you know, it's a great chance that they are clueless as far as being financially responsible in this day and age is not a good idea. Maybe when you get a little bit older and you can understand you've lived a little bit, I was kind of an advocate of waiting until you get 30, maybe.
But the problem is,
I wasn't really mad at that.
We know that there's so many black men that won't make it to 30. So all of those guys won't qualify for reparation in their lifetime because they died to whatever. It could be AIDS or it could be the gun violence or whatever the case may be.
Go ahead.
Because this is Kundalini talking. I definitely can say that reparations are due. What y'all are talking about definitely speaks volumes on what our own people really think about our situation. One thing I'll say first that I think is really funny is the people who know that we're not educated, who have the education, have some kind of way down there to make it as much as we want to do for ourselves, the responsibility of other people to educate us on what we need to know, which is very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I would like to ask this question. In the process of getting this reparations, are we going to get it based on A, nationality, B, race, or C, being indigenous? Which one are we fighting for?
Yeah, I would do it like they treat the American Indians. You have to prove your line of ancestry. You have to prove that you are a direct descendant of someone who was, in fact, a slave. That's what Indians have to do.
So,
I make no qualms with that.
So we do agree that it would have to be based on indigenous. We do understand by saying that we cannot use the word black and try to claim that as being indigenous based on the laws that we have stated, right?
But if we start going into the Moors, we know we're going to be way over a whole bunch of folk heads.
I'm not even talking about the Moors. I'm not even getting into that yet. What I'm saying is just based on using black or African-American, those do not have any place based on the laws that are set in place as of right now for a place of indigenous. So as much as we want to argue the point, do we not see the problem in using words that based on the law will not work?
Yeah, I can understand your point. Duly noted.
Whatever it's going to be, we're going to have to find a way to come to an agreement and find out whatever word it is that works for us to get that fight done based on being indigenous that's going to work. We're going to have to all agree, just like we've agreed on Negro, just like we've agreed on black, just like we've agreed on African-American, these supposed terms that we're coming to understanding that they don't work when it comes to being indigenous. We're going to have to find whatever word it is. I don't care if it's more super-duper Negro African-American from the black last slave of the Hebrews, whatever it is, we're going to have to come together, agree to that term, and we're going to have to put it in their face. Because if we continue to use terms, and you got to understand, based on us fighting for reparations, we are going to have to go through a court system. A court system is based on laws. It doesn't work on our opinions. So if we go in there and we start fighting these issues based on words that we know that don't work in a court, what do we expect them to do? All they're going to do is continue to let us to argue amongst ourselves, and at the end of the day, we're not getting the job done because we're not realizing the point. We have to find a common word that works within the system of which we live.
Okay, why is it that black people didn't get reparation? What did we do wrong?
I just stated it for you. We're fighting based on race. There is no race that's going to go into a court of law and get that issue, because even with the Native Americans, it's based on being indigenous. It's not based on a race. It's not based on a nationality, because a nationality comes from a nation. For African American to be a nationality, there would have to be a country called African America. It does not exist.
But we've never even actually gone to the court system in numbers and asked for it, though.
Exactly. Since we have not done that, it only makes sense that we go about it the proper way. Because the reason why it has not been done is because those people, even those who have attempted to try to go that route, have found out, through making a long story short, that it has nothing to do with nothing, because you're using words that have no value in that system to get what you're trying to get out of them.
AJ, what do you think?
It's like going to a basketball game and trying to use football rules. It's not gonna work.
Yeah, I know one thing. We're not gonna get nothing until we learn to come together. And first of all, we have to have representation, just like the Indians had representation.
Yeah.
You feel me? We don't have anybody representing us like that, and even fighting this fight in the legal system, as far as I know.
Okay.
We don't even have all of the Native Americans that are getting it. It's not like we have to have all of them to prove a point. It's no different. I'm going to say this real quick so I don't talk long. It's no different than right now you got the RIAA going into court systems and filing lawsuits against individuals and putting them on court records that these people owe them millions of dollars for these so-called downloads of music or whatnot, just like LimeWire wires offline and some of these other ones that's fit to go offline. They're going into court to prove a point, so that when they go in there with the masses and they've already said, so that anybody else that comes along and starts trying to do this stuff, we already have it on record that they can't do it. It starts off with just a few. We don't need everybody. I'm sure that between Puffy, Erykah Badu, Ice Cube, Snoop Dogg, and a few other people that are in any form, shape, or fashion of entertainment, there's enough money that a few of them can go into a court system and prove a point, and that's all you need is to have something on record that this sets precedence. That's where it starts.
Well, the problem with that, brother, is those are rich niggas, and they're already good. They don't care.
I mean, that's what people say, but I disagree. If they can go out there and they do stuff for the homeless and things of that nature, there are some who care. We can't keep on blaming all of them for some that don't do it. That's just a poor excuse. We need to go ahead and take the few that will and go ahead and move forward.
AJ, we waiting?
Yeah, I'm waiting for the break in it. I'm saying Coon made excellent points, but there are entities that are actually going for reparations. They have entities that have been battling that for years. I've actually met with a couple of them, and they do have some interesting things, and they're trying to approach it, like you said, Coon, to approach it from Kundalini from the legal aspect. And I'm saying they have good points, but I think, just like you said, we actually have to come together, and not really just a name or a gender or a race or a nationality. I'm saying we have to come together in common thought. See, we come together in common thought, going for the same purpose, then I think we would have a larger force to deal with, because if everybody's on the same page, it's easier to listen. Just like blog talk shows, it's easy to listen when you have one person talking or one voice talking or the choir singing, because everybody's in harmony. And that's basically what we need is to create some type of harmony or unity amongst ourselves so we can actually do what we're supposed to do.
Well, I'm kind of like the Marines, though, bro. I don't need everybody. I need the few and the proud. We can move with
that. That's what I'm saying.
If we get 10 or 20, that's 10 or 20. If those groups of people are over there doing it, it's amazing. Again, we still using black, we still using African American, and there are people out there that are proving, fact beyond a shadow of a doubt, those words in this country, based on the laws that are at hand, not our opinions, not what white people did in the 60s, based on the laws at hand, those words do not work in a court of law because of what they are attached to based in law. People, I hope we do a session one day where we can separate nationality from race and indigenous, and we can move on and move forward.
Maybe we'll have to. Okay, listen, if you'd like to chime in on what we're talking about, the number to call is 850-8390. Again, the number to call is 347-850-8390. Okay, we're going to move on, guys. My next topic is about something that's really seemed to come up since Obama or President Obama has taken office. That's the hate crime. And it really doesn't seem like there's any set laws in place that really define the hate crime. So it seems some kind of way that people keep slipping through the system, but it's just because we don't have it on the books right. What type of law should be put in place concerning hate crimes? How do you define a hate crime?
Well,
and what type of should apply?
Well, first, I think a hate crime should be the way other parties are disrespecting the office of president, not the person as a president, just the office of president. That should be a hate crime.
Ooh.
And then we can go to the other issues as far as, you know, same-sex references and ethnicity and all the other things. But first, the office of president should be that office of respectability. And
Ooh.
Over the past 2 years, or almost 2 years, we have not seen any parts of that the way it's been over the other 44.
Yeah. And you know what? I agree with you. Bush took
the hit. I don't know about that.
President Bush took some hits. He really did. And you know what? And he was very grateful about it. But there was a lot of
meetings. They call him President Bush. Nobody yelled out in the meeting and said, hey, you lie.
Not at all. I agree. Okay, I agree. You know what? You knew you was going to pay if you did. But some kind of way we lost that under this administration. They don't seem to fear. There doesn't seem to be any fear installed in their belief that you cannot do certain things or else there's going to be some repercussions. They don't fear him like people seem to have feared President Bush and respected his office. If they didn't respect the man,
it wasn't fear. It was respect.
Huh?
It wasn't fear at all. It was respect.
It was respect.
Because they respected the office. And I'm saying, you know, when it came out that, you know, everybody would use, you know, just his name as when they referenced him on news channels and everything, even the news channels would say, you know, well, President Bush or whatever, and their news channels just say Obama or whatever, you know, just call him by his name just like their friends have been hanging out. And I think that's disrespect altogether, because if you earn this position, that position should have respect, regardless if you respect the person, you respect the position. One more note, and I'm going to let y'all go. Just like in every political ad I saw, they say, this person is with Obama. He's not with us. Like, they want to take their country back. Like, they take their country back. Like, some black person came and took over the country, and now we're going to take it back from them.
Yeah,
but see, the thing about it is, what you have to understand, every time you see a person, especially a white person, do that, you have to understand that it all boils down to the basic black-white issue. You feel me? It all boils back down to them seeing us as less than a man than them. You feel what I'm saying? So, you know, when they say that, when they say just Obama, it speaks more about, not about the lack of respect for the presidency as an office and as an institution. It's about the lack of a black man. It's the lack of respect for the black man, period. You feel what I'm saying? Do I feel like they should make it a hate crime? I wouldn't take it that far. I want to agree with that part. But when it comes down to me just saying Obama instead of President Obama, every time I hear somebody say that, it shows me right there that their mind frame is just in a set, already set in stone, that black people are not the same as white people. They don't deserve that same amount of respect, and that's why they just feel like they can just say it. It has nothing to do with a lack of respect for the presidency. It's about the lack of respect for him as a man of color. Period, point blank.
But there seems to be a backlash against black people since President Obama has taken office. So the hate crimes seem to be up. I mean, so what do we do? I mean, what kind of laws need to be put in place so we can define this was a hate crime and so therefore they get 20 years because it's a hate crime? I mean, because I think it's so vague right now about, you know, what, you know, actually qualifies as a hate crime. You know what I'm saying? Should we say if they use a racial slur, if they do XYZ, you know, while committing the offense, then that qualifies as a hate crime? We got to have something stiff on the book.
Well, we definitely can't use it as words, because you know black people ain't good with words sometimes. We put ourselves in a real bad situation with what we say, so that ain't going to work. We need to figure out something a little bit more specific than that. Just saying a racial slur, that's a setup.
But see,
we can walk outside and say, hey, crackers, and next thing you know, it's going to be a hate crime.
When niggas kill other niggas, and they be like, nigga, I'm going to kill you, nigga, and shoot them, well, now is that a hate crime? I mean, what
straight up.
But see, some of the hate crimes are crimes against one race against another race. So I thought,
but
the
you know they're gonna find a way to filtrate that like they do everything else. It's gonna be something else more to it. Cause, and then if we don't, and then if we don't agree to the process, they are gonna say, now look at them. First they wanted the hate crimes, now they want to do something. They gonna play on the words. That's how. That's the devil's best game, is to play on words. No.
Yeah.
No.
He's
sir.
Right. He's right. He's right.
So we shouldn't have a law against hate crimes. Is that what you're saying? I mean,
that's
as black folks going down every
see,
day,
just like,
somebody
just like what
like,
you're doing. That's not what I see.
Okay.
I said we shouldn't play on words.
Okay.
We're gonna have to find a little bit more specific than words. Words is gonna be too easy.
Well, technically, right now it seems like if you're in the middle of an offense, whether that be beating someone up or killing someone, and somewhere in the middle of the offense you say you N word or you whatever the Jewish slur or whatever the Hispanic slur is, if you say those slurs in the middle of the offense, then all of a sudden, right now it's being categorized as a hate crime. And to me.
Well,
that's very vague.
Exactly.
You know, the
that's the whole point of setting. That's the whole point of setting it up, is to make it vague where you can put more people in jail. The whole point of the issue should be the intent.
Hmm. Well, the
you
intent
to
do
what?
You
harm
you because you're a certain race? Well, how
are
you gonna prove that?
I mean, I don't know. That's the whole point of this discussion. But we need to talk about intent. What was the purpose of you saying that?
Right.
Because you know, some people get lies. They scared to say stuff when they ain't mad, but when they get mad, they say whatever they want.
Yeah. If you can prove somebody did something, basically, because the way it is now, if you can prove that somebody did something based solely on because of their race, like right now, if me and you walking down the street and I didn't do anything to you, but you just jump on me, and the only thing that they can see was the reason why you jumped on me was only because I was black or because I was gay or whatever, you could be charged with a hate crime. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
So, I mean, it's going to be a question of, can you prove that they have any other reason to do this to this person besides the fact that they were black? Did you do something? Whether, you know what I'm saying? That's the only way that you can really go about doing it, because that's what it is right now. If they didn't do anything to you, you go out and you jump a whole bunch of gay guys, go out to a gay guy and you start punching them. You're like, I just hate gay people, and you just start swinging on them. If that person enjoyed, why did you do that? And they say, well, you know, if they can prove the fact, the only reason why they could think of it is because he was gay, then you're going to get charged with a hate crime. I mean, I don't know.
Because gay people been getting jumped on. Black folks been getting jumped on, and every race has gotten jumped on or killed for whatever reason. How can you just say just because of their race that's what happened? How do you know that those two people didn't know each other previously? It could have been any type of motive.
Isn't that the whole point of having a court and having a case and proving intent? I mean, that's the whole purpose of it, right?
But see, but the whole hate crime thing is all of a sudden become a big issue. Every time something happens, you know, now where it's two different races involved, then all of a sudden it's a hate crime one against the other. And I'm just trying to figure out what laws are in place right now, and should they be defined that? Because if I have an exchange with a person of another race and it gets heated and I call them a racial slur, if an altercation takes place, all of a sudden I'm going to be charged with a hate crime because who's the word? You see what I'm saying? Right now, that's how it goes. That I would have attacked them because, you know, I didn't like them because of their race.
No,
that's
not true, because
they can
call us a nigga. That don't mean they finna fight. You say whatever you want. So you put
well,
your hand on
it. It's not the word. It's after the word is used. So
exactly.
If you just call
each other
words,
that
doesn't have an effect on the hate crime. But if someone is beaten up or someone was murdered, but the slur was used before, then it's a hate crime. Or someone heard you using, you know, whatever, after you did whatever, then it's a hate crime.
Well, I mean, but it sounds to me like that's what you're saying.
I guess y'all
ain't
up on the hate crime. That's all I can say, because
there are laws that define it. But see, just like the conversation we had earlier about the lawyers. See, a lot of times people know that there's monetary litigation in those particular cases, and they will argue beyond the realm of what the law actually states in the beginning to make a new precedence for this particular matter to be brought up as a hate crime. So, see, still we got to go back and fix the judicial system to make something actually work. Instead of calling it a system, let's make it the judicial process. So, because when we talk about a system, no system has worked for blacks in America so far.
Right.
So I'd rather stay away from systems. Let's call it the process, because if it's the process, every ethnicity, every person within the realm or on the ground, on this round ball shaking, has to go through the same process. Then it's a process. Everybody has to go through it. And let's make it that way instead of calling it a system.
Well, Okay. We'll move on. Listen, everybody's been hearing about what's going on in Haiti. We see it's almost looking like another Katrina. And I know they're not in our country, but at the same time, we know that aid was sent over from countries across the world. In some kind of way, the system keeps failing the people in need after disasters. What is it that we can do in the case of another Katrina that we don't look like Haiti or we don't look like the first Katrina? What is it that our government can put in place so that that doesn't happen again? Because watching Haiti is just like watching, in my opinion, Katrina time 10. And it hurts to see people that look like me, you know, in a helpless situation, and people are reaching out and trying to help them, but some kind of way it doesn't seem that the help is getting to them. So
well,
what...
Some of the blame is on their leaders. Some of that blame you have to put on their leaders also, not just the other countries. You got to do that.
Right.
You got to do that. You
cannot
leave
well,
that
here,
aspect
though.
Of it out. Excuse me?
But didn't that happen to us here?
And
in
you
got to
blame that
Katrina?
On our leaders.
I just don't want to quit no job. Are you talking about
again, blaming
Katrina?
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, Haiti is Katrina time 10. But,
okay.
But we did live through it. You know what I'm saying? It was right here. So
okay,
what do
you know,
we do? Because, you know, we're seeing floods and catastrophes all over the place now. I mean, with no rhyme or reason, they're just popping up. So what can we have in place? What can FEMA do now to assure that if another Katrina happens, though, we won't see people, you know, left in water, standing for, you know, 3 or 4 days without shelter?
Hey, Karen, the most horrific thing is the truth.
Mm.
All right, the most horrific thing is the truth. And I only say that because, see, you know, we always reference Katrina, but if you look at the whole Katrina situation, see, Louisiana had a system set up that all the buses that were in this depot was going to be driven to higher lands. So if it actually flooded the way they predicted it was, they could drive back, pick up the people, and be gone and have their own people. But the government officials left. Nobody drove the buses. The buses were in the flood. The buses flooded. So I'm saying the process stopped with the city elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So yes. I'm saying if we can't get our city councilman in my community to do something about the streets or the bumps in the streets because kids are getting ran over, I'm going to go to Obama, President Obama, and say, President Obama, we have a problem with kids getting ran over in our streets. That's not his issue. So I'm saying, see, we're laying so many things at the feet of the president that are not, I'm saying, he's the end-all, be-all, the end of what is. But all those things have a scale. There's a hierarchy. There's a chain of command that things are supposed to go through. And we're not using the chain of command because we all have one finger pointing to Washington.
Okay, let's just say Nagin failed his people at a city level. And the government, I mean, the governor failed them at a state level. But FEMA is on a federal level.
And
without food and clothing and shelter for 5 days or whatever the number of days was.
They must work together, my sister.
They must work together.
When there's a breakdown in communication amongst the federal and state agencies and city agencies, there will be catastrophe. You will have another Katrina, okay? Every single time when there's a breakdown in the line of communication and chain of command from the city to the government, to the state, to the federal, it will happen again. I don't care where it happens. It will happen again.
But wasn't Nagin on television every day saying, send me some help? So that sounds like to me a mayor that said, I don't know what to do. Can y'all send me some help? What else? I mean, so, okay, at his level, why didn't somebody send in some help?
Why didn't the people that didn't know their people next door know how to help themselves?
You mean out of a hurricane? Are you serious?
I'm not saying out of a hurricane. I'm saying, okay, it's not like them walls was put up for no reason, right? When you have schools, you have fire drills, right? You have tornado drills, right? Nobody had a hurricane drill?
We're lucky that we don't live in hurricane country here. But I think it's kind of like when we hear the tornado warning.
It's not about the country.
That was a particular area.
I'm not sitting up there saying that they should be totally just all able to help themselves. Yeah. I'm saying sometimes, again, just like you said, we point the finger to Washington. It's just, again, we keep on saying it's like, at some point in time, we have to realize that at some point in time, we've got to learn how to educate ourselves as well as be able to deal with this system that's in place and try to work to make it better. It's a two-way street. we have to get involved, just like parents have to get involved with PTA for their kids, just like we have to get involved with our communities to help less crime. If we, hello, keyword, do not get involved and participate, what do we expect to happen?
Okay, let's go here. FEMA stands for, if I'm not mistaken, the Federal Emergency Management Agency or something to that effect,
okay,
or association or agency or whatever.
Okay,
so
yeah,
when you're dealing with elderly people and handicapped people and people that are in nursing homes and facilities like the jails and the prisons where they can't get out, you mean we don't have some system in place when the mayor stands on TV and says, I need help? Are
I don't
kidding?
Know. I'm just saying this. You can't tell me that there's not a group of people that's young enough that can work together and put something in place to help their elderly. Like, are we that weak?
I think
that
New Orleans was, to be honest with you. I think it couldn't have happened
I'm
to a workplace.
Saying,
I think economically they didn't probably have gas to get out of the city in some cases.
I don't know. I can't speak on those individual systems. All I'm saying, I bet you, just like we're talking right now, I bet you if we put 20% of the same effort, some of that stuff could be helped. Just 20. Because 9 times out of 10, when we go back, and I bet you if we do the research, they're not involved. We're not involved like that. It's just an everyday thing, and it's not even a thought that there's a possibility that there could be tragedies. It's whatever's happening in your world. You do what you do. You keep it moving. You go to school. You go to work. You go to church. Whatever you do, you have your own little circle, and that's the end of the day. And unfortunately, that's why there's the 20-80 rule.
20-80 rule. And explain that.
20% of the people benefit from 80% of the people's work.
Okay. I don't know if you've ever visited New Orleans, but I have. And when we left the airport and headed into the city, you
mm-hmm.
could have a sense of poverty. Just, you know, I mean, I've never seen so many people catching the transit system in a city before. And they just look like... It was a group of people who were profiting from the tourism, but there was a whole other group that was not. So my thing is, in that event, there were probably a lot of poor people who didn't even have transportation to get out of the city. So, again, you can't necessarily blame it on the city. We have FEMA.
I'm not blaming the city.
That
was, you're hearing, I don't know where you're hearing the words that I'm not saying.
Okay.
But what I'm saying specifically is in the process of realizing these types of situations, we have got to wake up. We have got to realize that I don't care how poor we may be, we have brains, we have legs, we have arms. You know, food will grow whether or not you put money, whether or not there's money or not. You know, beans, bananas, tomatoes, lettuce, those things will grow as long as you put a seed in the ground and fertilize it and take care of it. We have the capability of doing for self, of creating stuff for ourselves. We are so busy making it responsible and saying these group of people are so responsible for the larger hand when we're not looking at how can we help ourselves take care of ourselves. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that I don't know what they had at those times, and I feel for those people that were in those situations because they may have not had cars or whatnot. But I guarantee you if we would learn to start doing for ourselves and work together a little bit more, we would probably be able to help in situations like that nature because we would already be thinking about helping ourselves, white, black, Mexican, whatever. We've got to learn to be able to stop always depending on a larger group of people to make it happen. Or these group of people with this money that we already say, okay, we not getting it. So what you going to do? You going to man up or you going to keep talking about it?
There's so many individual pieces in between it.
But again, understand this. I'm not saying all. I'm not saying everybody has that capability. You know, everybody don't have cancer and some people do. But I'm saying there's a way that we can build, and it's going to take time, but there's a way that we can start building if we just start thinking about it and actually acting upon it and start doing some things, we can make some changes. We've talked for years before Katrina, you know what I'm saying? And we're still talking.
Okay. Listen, what were you saying?
Well, I was saying that as it pertains to your starting point was Haiti and Katrina, and to kind of sort of tie into what he's saying, he is saying essentially the core problem with us as a people. Okay, he went to the core. Okay, we know that's there. Anybody who knows anything about our people, we know that we have that issue. You know what I'm saying? We don't come together as a community, and everything, all those kind of issues that he just basically touched on. We understand that. But as it pertains to what you were saying, you know, what should FEMA have done, or what should these agencies or whatever has done? It's like what he's saying is true. If we would have helped ourselves, if we would have carpooled and got up with, and found Sister Jones around the way who ain't got no money to get out of town and threw her in the backseat with the ones who did have money and drove her on up to Houston or whatever else to get her out of the rain, just to let us, you know, that sense of community and tribalism that we have lost. You feel me? Yeah, a lot of us could have been saved. But at the same time, to go back to what you were saying, to say that FEMA is totally at fault, you feel what I'm saying, with dropping the ball, you can't lay it directly on FEMA. You can lay it on Bush at the end of the day because he is where the buck stops, but you have to put it on Bush. You have to put it on Nagin. You have to put it on, what's that, the governor, the city official. It was a total collapse of all systems,
yes,
on all levels, state,
yes,
federal, and city.
Yeah.
You feel what I'm saying? It wasn't just FEMA. You can't just point FEMA. You have to,
no,
all of them should be fired. Every single one of them that was in charge, if you were in charge of any kind of state or city or government agency that was involved with handling an emergency, and during that time, you should be fired from the president on down.
And you know, and we did demand that. We, you know what? Black people sat and watched their TVs and cried because we saw people that looked like us hurting.
We don't vote. We don't vote. That's how you do. That's how you fire them. You have to vote them out, and we don't vote. 3% of black people's turned out for this past November election. 3%? Really? 3%? We don't vote. We can't fire nobody. We can't fire nobody. That's it. That's the end of that discussion. Till we start voting, this is a mute point. It's mute.
And you know, and I feel that. I mean, I just felt like, you know what, when you watch that and you know it's going to happen again, and you just wonder, like, wow, is anybody paying attention that's going to happen, and what should we be doing to make certain that it doesn't happen? But see, I have a theory on why it took 5 days for them to get out. My theory is, I'm going to tell y'all, and I've never said this publicly, but I'm going to say it. My theory is the reason it took them so long to get those people out is they didn't know where the heck they were going to take that many black people. So it took them a week to figure out where they were going to, you know, divide everybody up to, because they couldn't just send them into one area, because then that area would be overpopulated and, you know, just absorbed with all this, you know, people in need. So they had to spread it out. So I think they were, you know, probably sitting up, even when we thought, you know, they said Bush didn't know. I think, you know, our president did know. I think he was just trying to figure out where the heck he was going to send them. Now, that's my belief. Rightly so, because we saw some effects of Katrina, and we saw that some of the people that came out of Katrina, you know, when they went to the different areas, you know, crime went up. So they probably were aware of that. I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they knew that. So they didn't want to and saturate one area.
I totally disagree with that. I'm going to disagree with you for two reasons. Well, number one, as far as when it comes to crime in New Orleans, I think I stated this before, they had a law in New Orleans to where if you kill somebody, they had 90 days to find evidence of you killing somebody or for somebody to come forward and witness to the crime. And if they could not find anybody within 90 days, they let you go.
A group of people from New Orleans were used to committing crimes and getting away with them.
But again, who put them laws in place? That should be a good question that somebody should research. Number two, I say this, and I think anybody that's listening should research this. Research the last time that we had an extreme situation, something that happened like that, and the president went fishing, because it's not the first time. It's a tradition.
I've invited President Bush on this show, so
he's not the first president to go fishing when we got a tragedy. It's not the first time. It's a tradition.
I'm not gonna go here. Listen, anybody else got anything? I'm not touching that. AJ, Prince Lism?
Yeah.
Well, I had one thing because it's not really off subject, but when I called into the show, I thought y'all were talking about what we could do to change and fix the system. I really take extreme issue
with the amount of time that dope boys get, that drug dealers get, especially this crime, this charge of conspiracy, that touches really home to me because I got a lot of my family. I came from the hood. I won't lie. I used to be a dope boy and all that. And, you know, I elevated my mind and moved up out of that, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, I can sympathize because I know the hearts of a lot of people who are doing a lot of time for dealing drugs. I know the heart of a lot of people who did hardly any time for killing people and they're out on the streets. I got first cousins doing 20 years for conspiracy. Well, I know cold-blooded killers that's out here walking the streets after 5 years. So I take I think that's a problem that we have. Obama and Eric Holder were supposed to be going back and repealing some of this, all this massive amount of time that black men caught for doing crack, dealing crack. You know, you got the same amount of crack, you get 20 years, you get the same amount of cocaine, you get probation because white people and doctors sniff cocaine, but it's the same damn drug just whipped and added with baking soda and Pyrex, okay? You know what I'm saying?
I can absolutely go there. You know what? Then let's address that question. What can be done as far as the laws are concerned that it evens out? If you're selling the same amount of crack as you are selling cocaine, why are the laws not the same? How can we fix that on the books so that a dope dealer is a dope dealer? And if you're going to give them 20 years, then you give the cocaine dealer the same time that you give the crack dealer. So
you also give police officers who serve it, you give them the same time as well. How about that one?
I'm sorry, say what?
You give police officers who serve it the same time as well.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. I'm just putting it out there because we ain't anti-police on the stage show, but and I understand that because didn't the guy who killed the guy in the train station, didn't he get like 2 years?
That's total bullshit. That whole case is you know one thing about it? I know a lot of people talk about black people, whatever, if they, you know, riot, why you burn down your community, blah blah. One thing, you know what, like me, I ain't gonna hang on, like people don't know me, man, on the show, maybe not, but I'm really at the end of the day, yeah, I got a lot of hood in me still. I try and keep it to a minimum, I try and contain it. But one thing about it, them niggas got every right to just really act the fool up there and go ahead and take it to the streets on them folks out there about that verdict.
Oh, no, because, you know, we're not going to win. If we take anything to the street, we ain't going to win. No, you know, because you don't want to advocate violence because then we're going to lose some if we do that.
Sometimes they don't understand. They don't understand it. They don't understand talking sometimes. Now, my mama was a Panther and my daddy marched with Martin.
No.
My granddaddy marched with Martin, and my mama was a Panther. So you got to understand who you're talking to here. You feel what I'm saying?
We got some radicalness in us.
At the end of the day, sometimes they don't understand talking. You feel what I'm saying?
But see, my belief, and I swear we're going 100 different directions here, but I'm going to tell you, y'all, this is what I believe. If black people ever realize our power, then we could make some changes. Because if we start voting in blocks, if we start shopping in blocks, if we start doing boycotts, then people will pay attention to us. But violence is not our way out, like Dr. King said. That's not the way we should go. What we should do is start using our buying power and using our vote to change folks' minds about how they feel about us. That's what I think about black people and what we should do.
I think we should do one better. How about we do this? Every time that we come up with a different subject, such as the voting, like I asked somebody the other day, I asked on Facebook, I said, can somebody explain to me the voting and the whole process of this GOP taking over the House? Can somebody explain what that means other than the fact that there are more Republicans in the House of Representatives? Somebody came along and actually gave a very good, thorough answer. People need to understand the situations at hand. Just saying going out to vote is, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But it definitely helps when you explain to someone what that can help in the long run and how it works. It's just like driving a car. It's one thing to drive a car and you say, okay, you need to change the oil. If you don't really give the explanation for the reason that you need to change the oil, sometimes people don't take it as serious. We need to explain to our own what the true meaning and definition of that really means and not just leave it at a general statement. We have a serious problem with that. We do that a lot. We don't really take out the time to explain because we say, go ahead and read. Then we turn around, black people don't read. Go ahead and look for the information, but black people don't look for the information. Why are we sitting up there waiting on it to happen and not putting it in place?
But you know what, though? We don't have any clear leaders right now, if the truth be known.
We're leaders on this phone. We're leaders on this phone.
We are. Absolutely. You know what? We all are four strong black people. This is very true.
Right. So we can make
it happen. And you know what? If we went out right now and tried to galvanize the community, it'll be somebody, some hater in the background going, well, why are you a leader? You know, what makes
welcome,
you a leader?
I welcome that hater.
If I were a hater thought, man, I would not have my show. There's a lot of things I wouldn't have if I really gave a damn about what a hater thought. Damn a hater.
Right.
But I mean, right. I'm serious. You know, you'll go out and you'll put a whole bunch of time into to telling people what you think should happen and how we can affect change in this country and this, that, and the other. And it'll be some group over in the corner who will tell, you know, I don't know if they'll be
I'm not worried about that. That's not my focus. That's too much energy being put into the negative, but I don't have the time for that. I do welcome the hater, and I hope that he gets blessed beyond belief to where he can leave me to hell alone. But other than that, I don't have time to worry about what he talk about.
But see, Blizzard made the
that's
point
too much
earlier.
Time. That's too much
when he
focus.
Does shows on sex, his numbers are crazy. But then when he
of
tries
course.
To talk
welcome,
about...
Welcome to planet Earth. Welcome to planet Earth.
Well, but I'm just saying black folks ain't trying to... I don't know, you know.
But
they
again,
don't want
to
hear
what I'm
when
saying
we talk
is,
about
again,
how to
listen,
talk.
Listen to what you're about to do. This is what I'm saying. Listen to what she's about to do. You're about to go right back to what I'm saying. We spent enough time telling what we don't do.
Yeah.
How about we get to the point of finding the ones who will and keep it moving?
Right.
We've already established that. We don't need to repeat it. We've established it. Okay, black people don't read. They don't do research, et cetera, et cetera. We've done that. Great. You know, kudos. I don't know who needs an award, but I can make it happen if need be. We're done with that. Let's get to
the
point of moving on.
Okay.
See, the thing is, change is not something that you just say. Change is the action that you do in the process.
Yeah.
So we're all talking about change, and it sounds good when everybody's screaming it, but we're all standing in the same place just yelling. See, until we actually want to change something, just like Kundalini said, you know, change is not me telling you it's time to change. Change is you seeing me do something and you follow me. See, it's time for us to act, and you know, because I agree there's a whole lot of shows that are talking about sex and all of those numbers are crazy. But see, the thing is, when you have shows like this or shows that actually define something or talk about something, people will come back and find the substance within it. But we can't just, you know, because me, I refuse. I can't write a joke. I'm a poet, man. I've been writing forever. I've never written a joke. I can't write a funny. My pen refused to write a funny. You know, because I see, I'm not saying it's useless, but I think there's a comedy club down the street. If you want to do some funny, they will accept you in there. You know, because I feel like people came out to hear something, and everybody came out for whatever purpose. And you have to give somebody what it is, even if you don't know what it is. But if you follow your purpose, whatever you got, somebody needs. But you following everybody else? Nobody really needs what you got because you're not offering anything except the person you're following.
Okay. Well, then let's go back to the question then. I think Blizzard brought up the fact about the crack cocaine and the cocaine. How do we go to the courts and say, you know what, we want to appeal to the process of y'all putting so many crack dealers in jail? It makes
Then they look
at you like, okay, you got a 9-to-5 and you worried about the crack dealer. But that's probably why people in the community haven't stood up for that situation. I'm just being real. That's probably why you haven't got numbers out there saying, we know this is wrong. You know, and we're going to do something about it for that simple reason.
I got to stop you. I got to stop you because, see, this is what I'm saying. I brung it up because of the fact that I know for a fact that Eric Holder, you know what I'm saying, he is actually, they were supposed to be doing this right. This is one of, first of all, if you really watched Obama on his stump, you feel what I'm saying, this is something that he actually addressed, okay?
Was that during the campaigning?
Yes, he addressed the issue when he appointed Eric Holder. Eric Holder addressed the issue, and he said that they were going to work on it. And actually, because I got a family that's in federal prison right now doing time for the same thing that I'm upset about, I know for a fact that they have tried to at least start the process. There is a process, like the brother said, you know what I'm saying, it's a process to everything. They are trying to fix it, and they are trying to right the wrong. They are getting some resistance, of course, you know what I'm saying, by many groups of people, policemen and federal prosecutors and all kind of stuff, you feel what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, they are trying to do that. You feel me?
Okay, when you say are trying, why are we not hearing anything about it? If they are trying.
You have to look it up. You have to. You have
again, the brother said you got to research. I did my research, so when I really care deeply about something, I will do it.
But
you know
I'm saying for the
so
masses, do you not think that if they were really trying to push this, the masses wouldn't hear about it?
They
obviously not. He just telling you.
They doing it. They trying to do it. I'm just saying they doing it a little bit too damn slow for me. I didn't vote for Obama for all the superficial shit. You feel what I'm saying? I heard that conversation that he had at Howard University about this subject, and that warned me.
What? Our president, God bless his soul, has not really done anything that has affected change in the community since that we live in. I mean, because you know, we're doing a whole lot about this gay marriage and this gay civil unions and all that. And to be honest with you, I could care less. And I'm not being insensitive, but I don't think that those issues are pressing compared to some of the others. And so while he's spending so much time on that, maybe he could jump on some of the other issues within our community. I'm just saying. Love him to death. But that's keeping it 100.
Yeah, you're right about that. Like I said, if this issue that he and if they don't address it, if they don't make that push that he said that he was going to do, and he said he was going to address this issue, because this is my one community issue that I pinpointed, that he said and he talked about out. And I remember when he said it, I saw that little exchange with him and the Howard University student. I saw Eric Holder and him discuss it. You feel me? You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, if he does not move it right along with this process, he might lose the vote.
Well, let me ask you this. How do they fix it? I mean, when you say fix it, you got to have a solution. What needs to happen?
They were going to go back and repeal it. What they were going to do is go back and and don't get me wrong, the power that be, no. Rush Limbaugh actually addressed this subject on his show. You feel me? You know, he knows that Eric Holder and Obama was talking about doing this, and he tried to bring it up. You know, he's like, of course, he's going to spin it his own way and make it seem like, well, now they want to let all the drug dealers out of prison. You know how that MF is, that fat pig, that's how, you know what I'm saying? You feel me? That's how he talks. He tried to really spin it as if he just want to just free all the drug dealers and, like, let them run. It's not the point. He just wants to make sure that everybody is being punished the same. And so what they're trying to do is go back and make it retroactive. If you're already in jail 10 years and you got convicted on conspiracy or the crack charge and all those kind of charges, if you already did 10 years, and if ordinarily the same person who got that same amount of cocaine would have only did 3, you're going to immediately get out right now. Because if you got a 20-year sentence and you already did 10, but somebody that normally got that same amount of cocaine would have only did 3, you've already done way above and beyond. You're not going to do them other 10. You're going to get out.
Well, see, I think there's something wrong with the system, too, with this. And I don't like to use the term snitching, but if I go and tell them that you were selling cocaine and they never even catch you with cocaine, they take my word alone and give you 20 years? I mean,
Not yours alone. They need at least 5 of you. That's
okay, so you find 5 people who hate me and tell them all to say, hey, Kerry, I'm not even going to put that on me, but Kundalini is selling cocaine. So all of a sudden he goes to prison on the word of 5 people?
Yes. It's called conspiracy. Yes, I got 2 cousins, first cousins in jail right now doing 260 federal months apiece, and neither one of them ever got caught with work. It's just because people said they did it. They got enough snitches on the stands, and they lost trial. They lost their trial. Didn't get caught with no work. Yeah. That's my problem. That's my issue.
Wow. Yeah. Fort Worth says free Twisted Black, because I think it's the same thing that happened to him. And so I think that that's happening too often, though. I mean, because really they can just want to get you off the street for whatever reason and find 5 people, you know, to say that, and it sounds like you're gone. I mean, and that's crazy, and your life is just down the tubes. And so I don't know what the answer is to it because, you know, to me they have to have some type of knowledge. I mean, wouldn't they have to have some kind of knowledge that you're doing in that industry in order for them to?
You know, sometimes, at the same point in time where they have to need to know that, they may just need to set an example.
Set an example for the people in the community.
For anybody else coming along, you got to show who's in charge.
Okay, so are you saying law enforcement has to show who's in charge?
They have to show who's in charge. In addition to that, you know, let's just say we all know at the end of the day, all of this stuff could not happen without a collaboration between both the criminals of the situation. and those people trying to put the criminals in jail and whatnot. There has to be a collaboration. Stuff on the streets don't go on without people knowing about it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have movies like American Gangster, where you see a group of people who are sitting down and making up a pyramid of who's all doing what. Think about that. So in the case, they're going to have to make an example out of somebody to say, hey, we are doing what we need to do out there. Otherwise, there's going to be people like, what's going on? Why are you not making anything happen? And they're, well, we're doing stuff. We're in the streets, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? We just caught this top drug dealer. Here you go. It's the pacification of the people.
That's the definition of the system, and that's what I was saying. See, we do have a system, and the system is as corrupt as the people running it. But if we had a process, the process doesn't truly involve the people, because the process moves regardless of who's, you know, governing the process. So that, as far as fixing our legal system, we need to turn to a process instead of just a system, because there is a collaboration. Like, okay, we're going to get this person, you know, we want to get these 15 cases off the docket. So what do you think we should do? Okay, give them 10 years probation. And see, probation is a jail sentence for, I have two nephews doing time. Because they decided to take the probation and not fight it, because they would tell them what you could get if you don't do this. And probation, if anything happens, if you're caught with somebody with a gun in the car, if anything happens while you're on papers, you finna go do time. So, and when you go do time, then you don't have the right to vote. So everything is going back this round circle of conversation we're having, dealing with the political process, dealing with the creating a process in a system of the legal system, and then, you know, back to reparations and the police department. So we're caught up, and I think we need to address it as a way of infiltrating their agreement process. See, let's make it where there's no agreement. Let's look at did he do it or did he not? And too often they would get somebody that was associated with him and say, okay, if you don't tell us who did it, we're going to say you did it.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, at the end of the day, see, the thing about it, like my cousin's case, for instance, like, look, let's keep it 100. Let's just pull the punch. They already doing time. It's done, daughter. They were D-boys. You feel what I'm saying? That's not the point. You feel what I'm saying? The point is how much time they got, as opposed to how much time somebody else has gotten for actually doing the same thing or actually dealing in the same substance, A. And B, the fact that they didn't actually catch them doing anything. They just got enough people on the stand to say that they did do it. Of course, these people that's on the stand get time taken off if they testify.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. In the process of them doing that, are they testifying in front of a jury, with a jury, or a court with just a judge?
Well, you got a choice. You know, with my cousin's cases, they had a jury. You feel what I'm saying?
Okay.
They had a jury. You know what I'm saying? They had a jury.
I was just curious.
Yeah, they lost their trial. They had a jury. You know what I'm saying?
Because most people don't know
When you parade 14, when you parade 13 people up there and all of them are pointing at you, you feel what I'm saying? Now, don't get me wrong. My cousins were no angels. You feel what I'm saying? They had been to jail before. Not for that. You know what I'm saying? But they had been to jail before. They were no angels. These guys were not angels. But at the end of the day, this is just it. I've never ever witnessed them physically harm anyone outside of a fist fight that had to do with some street shit. You feel what I'm saying? And they are going to do 20, and they're going to do it to the day, because it's federal time for the most part. You feel what I'm saying? If this crack law doesn't get changed, you feel what I'm saying? They're going to do it today. They're going to do 20 years in jail, which is 20 to about 280 months, give or take, you know what I'm saying, in federal time. And you do most of that time, okay? They're going to do that long time. Meanwhile, you got people who rape people, kill people, molest kids, and get out in 7 years, 8 years. If you're going to let that motherfucker out in 7 or 8 years under any circumstances whatsoever, why is this brother been sitting here for 20 years when you really didn't even catch him and you really didn't even physically hurt anybody? This is my issue.
But see, you know what? I think there's a lot wrong with the system in terms of that three strikes, you're out thing. You know, or three strikes in Texas, it's three strikes and you're out. It almost seems like if you walk on the line on the sidewalk, you're gone. You know, and so it just, to me, the three strikes you're out maybe should be a little bit more about a specific crime that you commit during that three strikes you're out, not just if you do something else, you're going to be gone. Because the system has so many different flaws in it, in the interrogation process. To me, that Miranda rights are there for a reason. And people should not be being put behind bars, you know, for long periods of time when they didn't even get their Miranda rights read to them, or they didn't have a guardian there or parents if they're underage, or if they were, you know, mentally to a certain, not at a certain capacity. It's just a whole lot wrong with our laws. And the snitching process, in my opinion, snitches should not necessarily be someone who needs to get a break on their sentence. And so, therefore, if they tell you that somebody sat in a cell and for no reason at all told them all their business about how they killed
right.
somebody, and then they come to court and recant whatever it was that they were, you know, supposedly told, and then they get their sentence lessened, something's wrong with the system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, something's very wrong with the system, because it just seems like it's so many ways in which you can put somebody behind bars for a long, long time that may not necessarily be right. You know, because I think there's nothing wrong with taking criminals off the street, but let's take criminals off the street, and let's not just put people in jail just because we can. You know, we don't want interrogations to have loopholes in them in which you took someone's rights away in order to put them in prison.
Well, here's
you know, we don't want
that people can do in that particular case to help out, and anybody listening can use this. What you can do is you can go to the store. There's Micro Center. There's Walmart. You can usually get about maybe 50 DVDs for maybe about 20 or 30 bucks. I'm sure that most of the people have cameras that can take video, or if they don't, they probably have a friend that does. You can get on that camera. You can discuss these issues. You can record it. You can upload it to a computer. You can put it on a DVD, and instead of passing out a bunch of BS, has nothing to do with nothing, you can pass out something that actually has relevance to a situation for absolutely free.
That's true, too. But you know what? But again, the listenership is not going to be there because, you know.
This is not about listening.
You just kind of like when Jerry Springer came on.
We have to have solutions. We can't worry about the rest of it. Okay, maybe it's not the listenership. We need solutions.
Yeah.
I'm just giving them solutions. Somebody else can come up with one, too. I ain't tripping.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's sad that, you know, I don't know, we don't care about things we should. It's kind of like we're all, and well, not all of us, but a lot of us are into that Jerry Springer TV radio kind of, you know, scenario.
Man, they care about it. They care enough about to pass out these Illuminati DVDs and putting Illuminati on YouTube and talking about Kanye West and Jay-Z are hooked up in it and everything else. They care. They just don't want to say that they care. They care. They have enough concern about it. It's just not in their face because we're not putting it in their face. Now, I guarantee you, if enough of it comes on BET, hello, instead of repeat shows about nothing, I said it, then we would probably have more people that would be concerned because the issues will be there in front and they're not coming on at 2 o'clock in the morning when they know damn well ain't nobody watching TV.
I mean, but BET has already let us down. We know that.
Right, exactly. You see what I'm saying?
BET is not for it's trying to stimulate their mind. You know?
Well, you know, BET ain't ran by us no way. They know what they do.
Yes.
It's not ran by us. We don't own BET.
No.
But see, at the end of the day, though, they market it for us.
Really?
When you get through. I mean, they
market it for us as a people, or market it for us as a stereotypical type of people.
They market liquor to us, baby, and
I'm saying. The same video that we see for a Dodge Charger on BET is not the same commercial you're going to see on Oprah.
No.
Right.
But you know what the thing
they
is,
know what
though,
they
when
doing.
But when you get through, BET is targeting not – their age demographics is dropping, isn't it?
Yep. It doesn't matter. It's information. Who cares who gets – I don't care if a 10-year-old gets in and talks about it at school and all of a sudden a teacher hears about it and brings a parent in and wants to know why this 10-year-old is talking about how the voting process works. It's called information.
But see, but doesn't Oprah target the buyer? And you're saying BET is targeting the
buyer. I don't care what Oprah target. I'm talking about we need to find out how to get this information out there. Now, if Oprah so choose to do it as well as she can give away a car, then, you know, kudos to her.
Okay. Well, we'll leave that there. Okay, let me ask something else then. The Ponzi schemes. Now, you know, and I know, and everybody else knows, if black folks was doing Ponzi schemes and getting away with billions of dollars, there would be some serious laws put into place. What's wrong with the system that Barney, was it Bernie Madoff, could get off with
yep.
that kind of money and didn't get the death penalty? A black man would have got the death penalty for.
Well, no, that's not true. He could not have gotten the death penalty for that offense.
You
no.
sure? If he was a black
no.
man, you sure?
Doesn't matter if he was a black
change
man.
Change the law just for him?
Nah,
okay.
Wouldn't work.
Did he get
nah,
as stiff a sentence
true.
As a black man would have got for doing what he did?
He's never getting out of prison. He's going to die in jail. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, what do you want?
Well, where the money at, though? Where the money at?
Well, if I was him, I'd have said, to hell with you, too. I wouldn't tell you shit if I ain't never from a rotten here. Hell, I'm going to give you the money for. Fuck you.
So yeah. You think they would have left your wife out if you had stole that kind of money and she had been your accountant? Wouldn't everybody, your whole family, would have gone to jail?
Well, yeah. Now, you're right about that part. That's what you're right. They may would have, you know what I'm saying? They probably would have, you know. But, I mean, they took Big Meat down and they didn't take everybody down. You know what I'm saying?
But, I mean, they left her with an allowance and a place to stay. And I mean, nobody's accounting for all the millions that are gone. I mean, I'm like, are y'all...
Did she give up any information as evidence to help incriminate him?
Say what?
Did she give up any information to help incriminate him?
I don't think so. No.
We don't think so, or you know?
I don't think she did. I don't think she testified. You know, you have the law that you don't have to testify against your spouse. So, I haven't heard anything about her testifying. She pretended she didn't know. She said, I was an accountant, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. How can you be an accountant?
They can't testify against her husband. No, they can't do that. It's not just, you can't
but,
do that.
But if she's a part of the system, did they decide to take her to court? Or did they just let it go?
No, they badgered the son a little bit. They gave him a hard time. They gave the son a hard time. You feel me? And a couple of associates. You know what I mean? But none of them have like been to jail. I don't know if they got trials coming up, but I remember them harassing the son a little bit and hauling him in there back and forth. But none of them have been to jail. None of them have done any time. And he's not going to give him. He knows he's going to die in jail. So why give him the money? I wouldn't give him the money either.
But we keep all these repeat cases of Ponzi schemes. And I'm like, okay, something's wrong with the law because we should make an example out of that first joke and everybody else who stole their money ought to be giving it back. So something's wrong with the way we're handling this because we're talking about people's 401ks and life savings here.
He wasn't, I mean, before you had Madoff, you had Enron.
Oh, true, right. And we forget that. You're right, Enron was first. So why didn't we make an example out of Enron?
Because people that you want to make an example out of are the people that are in the pockets of the lobbyists, and the lobbyists are in the pockets of the politicians. Are we there? That's pretty much what's going on. You know what I'm saying? I can't say any plainer. That's it.
But see, but that doesn't help me if I'm a school teacher and my life savings just got taken away from me, just like
it doesn't.
You know, and all they can tell me is I'm sorry, and nobody knows where my money's at. I mean.
Yeah.
To me,
right.
Something's wrong with the system. Maybe those crimes should be punishable with life in prison every single time. If you're convicted, you're going to prison. What was the guy with Enron that he supposedly was waiting for trial and went to his vacation house and suddenly he dies and mysteriously there's, you know, come on.
Never going to happen. Never going to happen. That's just like after this whole financial collapse. That happened on Bush's watch that Obama keeps somehow getting blamed for. After that whole thing, you feel what I'm saying? Wall Street is still Wall Street at the end of the day.
And I hear you say that, but if that was poor people committing crimes like that or black people or...
Let me tell you something. And I got to say this, and I actually got to get off the phone. I really don't want to get off the phone. I got to get off. Let me tell you something. And everybody who may listen to the replay that's on the phone now, you know what I'm saying? We know and you know that we can't do the same thing that they can do. At the end of the day, it's all about rich, poor, black, white, class, classism, racism, okay? So you can't realistically live in this country and expect for there to be total equality. I know people like to have this little fantasy in their brain as if that's going to happen or as if it's going on now. We know it's not going on now, but some people even have the fantasy in their brain that someday, maybe, just maybe, it might, okay? This country is 200 years old. Rome lasted a lot longer, and they still never got it all together. And it was like, and life was a lot more simpler then. You feel what I'm saying? It's not going to happen, all right?
It's not going to happen, so give up on that.
It's not going to happen. You got to fight for what you can fight and try to get some things changed and do what you can. I'm not saying lay down because I'm not going to lay down. I'm going to still represent, and I'm going to still fight for what I believe in and try and, you know, fix things as best I can. I use my radio show as a vessel, as a voice to help and, you know what I'm saying, uplift my people at the same time and have a little fun with it. But at the end of the day, this is America. Okay? This is what it is. All
listen,
right?
Tell them how to catch your show.
Country. This country is a capitalistic country.
agree.
Money rules. The money runs everything here. So when you think in this country is a in a capitalistic society, the dollar is the almighty power. You feel what I'm saying?
I do.
More so than the color of your skin. You can be black and look, but when you rich and black, you are in a whole other league. A lot of white people don't even look at you the same as the regular black. It's like
this is true. All of a sudden, your color don't matter.
Worse than black people.
This is true. This is so true. Well, listen, tell them how to catch your show.
www.blogtalkradio.com/K-100. The letter K dash the number 100. K-100.
And they can get your show when?
I air live Monday through Thursdays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. But check out my archive files. I'm on episode 107 right now. You got a lot of catching up to do. You feel me? And we talk about a lot of issues. My show is quite entertaining, so you can listen to the replays, and it's just as entertaining as a live show. So check it out.
I co-sign that. Thank you, Blizzon, for being a part of the discussion.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, I'll talk to the show, too, man. Y'all be easy, man. All right.
So, Coon, at the end of the day, we've discussed everything under the sun, and we still came back to the same conclusion that we as a people have got to step up to the plate and stop expecting everyone else to do it for us, and we got to do it for ourselves.
Right.
What's the first step?
Just making a move. A lot of times we have some answers right in front of our face and using it, like I said, just with media. It's amazing to me we have so many bootleggers that bootleg CDs illegally or whatnot the case may be to make their living, but they want bootleg information that can help their own community. And it's sad. We don't have a damage control system. We'd rather damage it and worry about the damages in the aftermath, you know, at the end of the day, just like all the drug dealers who have, you know, mastermind big giant plans and made millions of dollars and end up going to jail and, you know, come back saying, I didn't realize how many people I was hurting, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have a damage control system. You know, it starts with us realizing that we're affecting our own in a negative way, and we need to find, if we can find a negative, we can find a positive. And I think if we can do that, like I said, even if we do 20% of it, it'll be different, because right now we probably have about 1% to 2%, just like the voting.
Okay. Well, I said earlier we don't have any clear leaders. The NAACP in recent years has not been what it was, let's just say, back in the civil rights movement. So do we need a new organization, or should we join up with them? And, you know, I don't know, because right now it just doesn't seem to be effective. It's just lost its
oomph. It's not effective, and I speak this as a 35-year-old. It's not effective because this is to anybody that's listening, these 25 to 30-year-olds running around playing these games, trying to be on the same page with these little 17, 18-year-olds and their mentalities. We're not making them understand that they're setting a real bad example for us based on the mentality and the presentation, and they're making it as if this is cool. Mm-hmm. This ain't cool. You can walk around and sag in your pants and do what you want to do and act like you're a little kid, but you need to act like you got some type of brains about yourself when you're talking. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to do, as it was told to me, sometimes you have to come to people giving them what they want so you can share with them what you have to give. And mm-hmm. they're giving them what they want, and they're leaving it at that. And that's mm-hmm. taking advantage. You need
because
to share with them something beyond what, you know, just the simplicity of stuff.
But
I do
it
all the time. It works.
Oh, I believe you. Doesn't it almost seem, though, sometimes that, like, the black man is becoming less and less significant in this country? It seems like, okay, when we start saying, okay, women's rights, and then we start saying this person's rights and that person's rights and cracking glass ceilings and this, that, and the other, doesn't it seem like the black man is getting pushed further and further to the back of the line? So,
of course, because we're not using the right words. We got to stop saying black. We got to stop saying African-American. We got to come with a rule of using a word that works with the regulations of what we have set in place based on the laws at hand. I can't state that enough. If we keep using words and going into a court system that says, well, whatever, you're mm-hmm. not going to get nothing out of it. We have to understand the pen
is mightier than the sword. I can't stress it enough. The laws in place are set to make an example out of people who don't know what they're talking about. This is why slang, unfortunately, as it used to help, it doesn't help. It worsens it because we get to using so much slang that we forget to understand the real meaning behind the word, like saying it's cold, as if to say it's chill, versus saying it's chilly outside and it's actually cold. We're not using the proper words, and then we get caught up in the system, and then when our lives are at stake, we don't even know how to talk. What do you expect to happen?
But see, another thing that happens in our community way too often is, if it's not me, it doesn't matter. So if
life is at stake, it's going to matter. You're perfectly right.
Yeah, it's kind of like if I see you in trouble, you know, with the police and they're harassing you and I tell you we need to go down to the police department and we need to boycott, more than likely you're going to tell me, well, you know what, I really don't want no trouble, so I'm not going to get involved, or you're not going to get involved. But at the same time, when it's your turn, you know, and something happens to you, then you want everybody to come together. And we just seem to have that real bad in our community where we don't even – I don't know. We don't even seem to care unless it's us. And then we get mad that everybody doesn't rally around us when it's us. And I think we really need to stop it. In the civil rights movement, when one person had a problem, everybody had a problem. Martin Luther King said an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. And we seem to forget that today some kind of way. We just seem like, you know, it's all about me and mine. And so as long as me and mine ain't affected, then to heck with you. And
well,
so I don't
think
we can get anywhere until we learn to come together and realize unity.
First of all, you have to stop making that statement if you don't think we can get anywhere, because you're manifesting that into the air. Another problem that with that situation is that we have forgotten the ability to use what I call the player card. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who are fake, who want to pretend that they're out there to help people when they're actually committing some of the same situations that they're fighting against. And we forgot how to do just like what, you know, those in control, whether or not they be white, black, or whatever, what they do is they use them as pawns. We forgot how to manipulate the system. Just because you're fake doesn't mean we can't use you. And trust me, I've ran into plenty of them.
So you can use a fake.
They're out there. They're out there doing stuff right now. They're out there telling people, don't do this, or stop selling drugs, or stop hanging your pants down low. And you'll find out that some of them same people are committing the very same situation that they're going against.
Wow. But then what do you do? I mean, so how can you use someone like that?
They're out there promoting against it.
Okay.
Get behind
okay.
it.
Gotcha. Okay. So even though you know they're fake, you can still use the fact that they're out there promoting it.
Other people who don't know they fake are supporting it. Knowledge is power.
But see, I can't stress enough how important it is to unify, because in unity, people respect you. It's just like going to do anything. The Lone Ranger had Tonto. Who was his sidekick? Was it Tonto?
Right.
With the Lone Ranger, because even as powerful and as strong as he was, he still realized a sidekick don't hurt. And so I think whenever we learn how to take into consideration that it's easier to go in a group than it is to go solo to do anything. I mean, so I think once we realize boycotts worked in the 60s and they work today, you know, buying power is like incredible when manufacturers realize that you ain't going to buy their product and all your friends and your family ain't going to buy their product, all of a sudden they want to listen to what you say. But if you write in one letter and say, I'm not going to buy your product anymore because I'm dissatisfied, that doesn't affect them. But if they know everybody that you know, and you're going to tell everybody that you know that whatever happened, then they respect you. And I think we've got to go back to that. In order to affect anything today, we're going to have to come together. And that's what I don't see happening. And I pray that some kind of way our people realize the power in numbers. I mean, period.
I think I agree with what you're saying, but I will say this. One thing that we've got to say, stop doing is saying go back. We need to move forward. One thing we've got to stop saying is that we haven't learned. We know it. The problem is we don't apply it. You can know what 50 plus 50 is and that it equals 100, but if you don't know how to apply it to a situation, it makes no use. You can know that A squared plus B squared equals C squared in the Pythagorean theorem, but if you don't know the application of how to use it in everyday life, it will not make sense to you.
And
we
I
have
agree
to
with
apply it at small groups, whether it be four or five, or whether there's large groups like the NAACP. What the NAACP, as well as any other organization that's having trouble needs, is I don't even want to say a rebirth, but it just, to the extent that's what it would probably be, is a group of people who just like, let's get the job done. Let's stop talking, and as soon as somebody puts something on the table, let's put it to action. If we can't put it to action in its fullest, let's start out where we can. Instead of waiting until the last minute and trying to put it all together, it's just like, for instance, if you're trying to put a program together that runs $50,000 and you wait until you get to $50,000 to do it and it took a year to do it, you just missed out on a year of applying yourself. But if you know within that $50,000 application, there's a $2,000 application that can start tomorrow, you have done something.
We've got to
do something. If we do something, it will cause other people to naturally react to it. It will not ever be everybody.
And you know what?
It's about getting it done.
If Blizzard was correct and only a few percentages of us voted, that's a shame. Because this election was probably more important than the presidential election in many ways. Because if he can't get anything done for the next 2 years, you know, how is that going to work for us? And so,
but at the same time, look at what they did, and I can speak on this from somebody just looking at it from a voter's aspect. Look at what they did. They kept saying words like, I ain't even going to lie to you. I didn't know what the hell the Tea Party was. I didn't know nothing about no GOP. I had to go, I was like, Tea Party, GOP, what happened to the Democrats and Republicans? I mean, what the hell, what's going on? What are they doing? And
the language started changing a little bit this election.
Yeah, the language started changing intentionally. I watched it. They started changing the language of what they were talking about to confuse people who don't do enough research. In addition to that, notice that we as a people made it important in the process of President Obama to make it an issue about what the purpose of voting. This is about getting a black person in or making change or whatever. Everybody was talking about it. When it came to this issue, nobody made it an issue other than saying, you need to go vote. Wasn't that what was happening before President Obama? Wasn't everybody saying you need to go vote? They left it at the simplicity. When it came to President Obama, we got into the specifics. And that's why I keep saying it's unfortunate for us that we think that general terms work on us. I don't know what makes us think that works on us. We don't work on general terms. It is like, I don't care if it's drugs or whatever. You can say, okay, well, you can have these drugs and you can make, you know, another $100. Any real drug dealer will tell you they know the specifics from how to make it, how to serve it, what it costs, how to break it down per cost, how to go out there and sell it. There is what? Details. Because at the end of the day, just like with that, in any other situation, it is a business. Voting is a business.
I agree. Y'all, we down to our
last. It should be our business.
Seconds. We're down to our last 60 seconds. We really enjoyed this topic today. I mean, I have. I don't know about you, Kalini, but I really did. AJ had to drop off early because he had some issues going on. But I really enjoyed the topic today. I think we bounced around a lot and we discussed a lot of things. But really what we're trying to do is just to show people that the ability to solve problems should not just be with our lawmakers. We should be trying to figure out solutions ourselves and yes, figuring out a way that we can tell them what we think can fix the problem sometime. As opposed to waiting for them to solve them for us. On behalf of Kundalini, AJ, and myself, we'd like to say thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Free Malakazi York.